Today's episode is brought to you by Progressive, where drivers who save by switching save nearly $750 on average. Quote now at progressive.com. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $744 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2022 and May 2023. Potential savings will vary. Thanks for supporting the Fable and Folly Network. Here's another show we know you'll love.
Greetings, I'm Bernard.
And I'm Magenta. You might know us from such hit podcasts as Madame Magenta, Sonus Mystica,
Horror Anthology Magenta Presents,
or Season 3 of Mockery Manor.
We're everywhere.
And we're spreading faster than an STD in an old folks' home, because now we have a brand new podcast, Wham!
Wham! It's a fun acronym that stands for We Have a Movie.
Oh, it's not just an acronym, Bernard.
It's not?
It's a chat podcast where we invent smash hit Hollywood movies based on popular toys.
If you like the Barbie movie and you want to see similar treatments of your favourite childhood toys, I'll wager you'll like Wham! With episodes on Polly Pocket, Rubik's Cube, Game Boy, Strawberry Shortcake,
Furby, Connect Four, and lots of other nostalgia bait. But it's not just for adults who still like toys. It's a podcast for anyone who loves Hollywood tropes and comedy.
And quantum mechanics.
And BDSM.
Wham! Has something for everyone, but is still specifically about movies.
That's Wham! W-H-A-M. You know, like when Batman punches someone.
Yes.
Adam West. That Batman.
Exactly.
Not the Christopher Nolan one.
No.
Download it anywhere you listen to podcasts. That's what the world needs, another movie podcast.
Was that clear? Maybe I shouldn't have mentioned quantum mechanics.
Hey everybody, my name is Bob Raimunda. I am an audio drama writer, producer, and critic that has been lucky enough to work with the Gideon Media team in the last 2 years. And today I'm joined by Give Me Away creator and writer and director Mac Rogers and Jordana Williams.
Hi Bob.
Hey, how are you guys today?
Doing well, thanks. How are you?
I'm doing great, and I'm so excited to be here and to talk about this. Today, everyone, we're going to be talking about Give Me Away Season 2 and why, for the first time in their long and storied careers in this medium, that they have decided to go back and actually return to a world of one of their shows. So before we get into the juiciest bits of the season that is to come, I would love to know, why Give Me Away? Like, what about this story from the jump inspired you to create a serialized show instead of another limited series after all these years?
That was a little bit built in as a hope from the very beginning. I mean, you can never just sort of say, oh, this is definitely going to be a multi-season show. You have to like wait and find out if anyone actually likes it first. But for almost my entire creative life as a writer, I have written stories with definitive endings. I come from playwriting, and I've always written towards like whatever was going to be happening as the curtain falls, the lights go down. And then when I got into writing audio dramas, my first several ones, the two that I wrote for Panoply and GE, The Message and Life After, they were both definitively written targeting a specific ending. That was also the case with Steal the Stars and a number of the other works that from Gideon Media that I've written. But I kind of noticed that, like, when I looked around at other audio dramas, the ones that people just fell profoundly in love with were the ones where they get to spend several years in the company of characters that they love. There's just like a whole extra level of how you feel about like Caleb from Bright Sessions or something, because Caleb starts feeling like a friend you've been spending years with. So I wanted to sort of explore something like that. And with Give Me Away, it was a challenge to kind of sit down and think of an idea. It's like, what's an idea that I could imagine taking away this precious anchor that's been so valuable to me creatively of knowing what the ending is and writing towards that? What's a story that I could feel like I could relinquish that, number one, and number two, that could expand season after season without feeling padded or without feeling like, you know, you're just sort of forcing more life back into it? With the Give Me Away story, there was some built-in mechanisms, like the fact that like new people would join, new volunteers would come to Red Camp to be hosts, new aliens would come out of the computer mainframe prison in the Ghost House. There was a naturally occurring reason why more characters would join the story. And there was a naturally occurring reason that America's relationship with the Nevada Project Red Camp community would evolve. There were just natural reasons why this story could be a year-over-year story without being endlessly padded.
Absolutely. I have actually had a chance to listen to all of season two as it exists in its current stance. It's not entirely finished producing yet, but I can say that it is absolutely incredible and we're along for a really great ride. What was your biggest priority, both of you, when breaking the story for this season in order to expand that world of Nevada Project and its residents? How did you approach this in a way that you felt like you were doing something new this time?
Well, I watched tons of television in my life, and I've obviously watched tons of second and third seasons in my life, and it was interesting to suddenly have to deploy all that experience as a producer of something where it's like, oh, right, you've got to bring in, there is an expectation that you're going to bring in new characters. There's an expectation that you're going to bring in escalated dilemmas. But at the same time, you have to make sure that you're continuing to service the existing characters. You know, that's actually a quite tricky tightrope, especially when, you know, we're a company of modest means. We always imagine this as a tightly contained 8-episode season. So it was a lot of stuff to kind of get in, but in a way that's kind of helpful because you're like, okay, you lay out the 8 episodes in your outline. You're like, every one of these episodes is going to have a very specific mission, and every single minute is going to have to contribute to the project of making this world bigger while not forgetting where it came from, not forgetting the core characters. The vision with Graham Shapiro from the very beginning, my vision was always that he was essentially going to be what I thought of as the McNulty character. The first season of The Wire, Dominic West's McNulty is basically treated as the protagonist of the show. He never goes away. He never stops being a principal character in The Wire, but the universe gets wider and wider and wider. And that's sort of the vision that we always had for Graham and then Graham Joshua from the beginning. But, you know, I wanted to have an expanded participation for Graham's family with the idea that you know, Graham makes this choice at the beginning of season one, but it's one of my experiences of life that your past kind of trails after you. The way that love binds people together, even in sort of dysfunctional situations, your past will always sort of be dragged along with you as you attempt to move into future realms of life. And so I really wanted to keep that very present. But then I also wanted to bring in new volunteers to Red Camp and new aliens. And a big thing I wanted to explore with the character of Noah, played by Lauren Shippen on the show, then inhabits, then hosts an alien named Jade. I really wanted to explore the idea that as no matter how progressive you think you are, there's always someone who's going to come along later and join your movement and is going to say, you're totally corny. You've got all these outmoded ideas. I'm the new progressive one. I'm coming in with the new ideas. I'm going to out-progressive you. And that's always something you see with progressive movements. And I definitely wanted to explore something like that.
I think that Give Me Away is the most generative premise Mac has ever come up with. The way it evolves, it's almost like amoebas becoming multicellular organisms. Graham starts as this guy who's in this kind of midlife rut. And then by taking on Joshua, he changes and broadens, and there's more conflict and there's more strength. And then Red Camp itself becomes this kind of multi-organic community. And then families are similar kind of hive organisms. And that's what makes it so exciting, but also harder and harder to keep up with, which is another way to build the drama. There are things that happen in season two that happen directly because Brooke and Deirdre have too much to keep track of, in a way that sort of replicates our own experience of managing this growing universe. But it's really exciting. And we've grown these characters a lot. Brooke and Deirdre loosen up in ways they simply didn't in season one. Jamie grows a lot. It still very much stays Jamie. But seeing characters grow and become more complex and messier is one of the real delights of season two.
Yeah, I love that. One of my favorite parts about season one is how the science fiction aspect of the show is sort of really the back burner undercurrent to the drama of Graham and his family. And what I love about what you've done with season two is how that balance is still there, but instead of centrally just being about Graham's family, it is now sort of about the family that is being built between Graham and Joshua and Brooke and Deirdre. At its core, we're in an ensemble family drama show.
We're lucky to have incredible actors, which does a lot of that work for us.
And in a weird way, we've been training for this. We did this trilogy of plays that's about a family going through a science fiction evolution that goes in very different directions. But in a weird way, it's almost like, you know, we were like going to school for integrating science fiction and relatable family elements on every level, the writing level, the directing level, the ensemble level. So much of our theater background has helped prepare us to kind of take a lot of those ideas and take them to like a higher level and an even more nuanced and ongoing level.
Yeah, it's like, I think your family would still annoy the hell out of you even as like the world was ending.
Absolutely.
It feels very true to me.
Yeah, and just for the listeners out there, if you can get your hands on a copy of the scripts for the Honeycomb trilogy, I sincerely encourage you to do so. I was lucky enough to get to read those a few years ago, and they are truly magical work and clearly lay the groundwork for so much of, you know, this team's work in the audio drama community. So that's just shout out to the Honeycomb trilogy. It rules. Mac, I know you had a certain understanding of the shape of the season before writing it, but every draft comes along with its own sort of unique challenges. What tricks do you have up your sleeve to write yourself out of or into a corner as you're working on those scripts and actually finding the story when you're in the weeds like that?
I mean, a big part of it is just like needing to tell the kind of story that a television series would tell in maybe like 10, 50 minute episodes, or if it was network, you know, like even more episodes than that. And we need to tell it in 8, 30 to 40 minute episodes. Every single minute has to count. The outlining process, you know, it has to be kind of rigorous. And a lot of the corners end up getting anticipated in advance. But yes, of course, I never completely guess all of them. But a big part of it for me is just making sure that every single scene has a reason to be told via audio. I mean, one thing I always tell people is they say, what's the biggest trick for writing for audio? It's like, you have to figure out why every scene is audio before you start writing the script. That's part of your outline. Your outline isn't just what happens in each scene. Your outline is also, why is this scene an audio scene? Because if you're only just starting to figure that out while you're writing the scene, you're going to be scrambling. So yeah, a big part of it is just outlining and putting yourself through the whole demoralizing process of figuring out why the whole storyline just doesn't work at the outline stage, and then going through all that despair. Because it's much easier to go through that despair at the outline stage than it is at the script stage when there's so many pages ahead of you. And then beyond that, there's nearly always a character-based reason to get you out of a mess. It's kind of funny. There was an idea I had for a really cool thing that could happen. And it could either happen to an existing season one character, or I could invent a brand new character for this to happen to. So I emailed Sean and Jordan, and I was like, here's this idea. It could either happen to this person who we already know and who's already been developed from season one, or it could happen to a brand new character if we don't want to inflict this thing on somebody we already know. And they both unanimously, vociferously said, make it happen to the guy we already know. Make it happen to the character we've already explored. That choice was so right. That ended up getting me out of so many scrapes. So many of the just plot mechanics of the season were only possible because a deeply established character went through this kind of extraordinary set of circumstances. And it's so funny how that I was even considering a situation that would have so profoundly hamstrung me from the beginning. But so often pre-established relationships and character can get you through that kind of thing.
Absolutely. Again, without spoilers, I genuinely could not imagine season two working as well as it does if the decision weren't made in the direction that it was. So I applaud you all for taking that, you know, challenge, really, that it presented, even if it did sort of, you know, write you out of all of those corners.
Also, there are things about that character that we know from season one that make the decisions absolutely make sense. Season two takes them in a big direction, a new direction in terms of what happens to them, but you're not at all surprised that they choose what they choose. One other thing that I just wanted to add that I think really helped make season two work is that Matt got all the script drafts done for the whole season, and we were able to get the whole cast together on Zoom and read through the whole season with them. So they all had an awareness of the overall shape of the story, and I could just kind of remind them at the beginning of a session, this is where we are, this is what's happened, and they could inhabit that a little more than me just kind of giving them those circumstances without having been through that context.
That's so wonderful. I'm jealous. That's a hard thing to pull off, especially when you're in an ensemble show.
Oh, huge luxury. We may never be able to do it again, but I'm really glad we could do it for this.
Yeah, absolutely. I can imagine. Now, speaking specifically to you, Jordana, I want to talk about the magic that is watching you direct. I'll never forget what it was like just seeing you in action when we were putting together the Forgive Me and Give Me Away crossover that we did a couple of years ago. And I'm so struck by how you can take those words that are on a page and pull literally the most three-dimensional performances I've ever heard out of any cast member.
That's very kind.
What do you look for when prepping for a production session to help your actors get in that right headspace, especially those whose characters have a second?
I look for what's exciting in the scene, where there might be a problem, and just it's super simple stuff. It's just like, what does everybody want, right? It's like acting 101 stuff. Letting it be messy, letting it be several things at once, getting the actors together as much as possible. You know, sometimes you can't book a session with all the actors in the scene together, but if you can, you can always tell if they're listening to each other, and you can always tell if they're changing each other. Another thing that I'm really big on is making sure we don't anticipate the end of the scene, which is a trap I think actors fall into a lot. It's like, this ends somewhere sad, so this is a sad scene. And it's like, no, you came in hoping for a thing. So hope for that until the moment it's clear it's falling away. So I really, like, I don't think there's anything, like, novel in my approach. But I think it's just kind of staying focused on those core principles and meeting the actor where they are. I almost never give notes before I hear it the first time through, because there are going to be opportunities and surprises in what the actors bring in. And so I think just, like, remaining open to us all surprising each other keeps things fun and great, and we end up somewhere good. Also, one last thing is I think I have gotten better over time about admitting what I don't know, and also talking honestly with the actors about what I'm looking for that I'm not getting yet, in a way that I used to worry would, like, hurt their feelings or inhibit them. But I think it's actually respectful to trust that if we're honest with each other, we can get to a better place.
I love that so much, especially the idea that you talked about a little while ago, people anticipating the end of a scene. I think that's not something I've ever thought about in that way, but will change the way that I approach directing in the future, genuinely.
Yeah, I always feel like the last scene of something doesn't work until you start playing it as a beginning.
I love that. That's wonderful. Now that you're deep into production on season two, is there anything you've learned this time around that's different from the way you made season one, or that you might still change now that you're this far, that would make you approach season three or beyond differently?
I actually want to give Jordana credit. She's basically like, I don't think we should, like, start production until we have at least one draft of the scripts, because that was such a struggle with season one, was that I was still writing while we were recording. And a huge part of the job, if you're on the project as a producer, which I am, in addition to being a writer, a big part of the job is giving notes. And I'm sort of so in awe of what sound designers and composers do that I end up sort of feeling a little bit sheepish. I'm like, oh, this already sounds amazing. I feel weird asking for my like weird little wrinkle to this. You know, and what I found is like actually those professionals actually want, you're incredibly specific. What's the ideal result that you want? And I'll find a way to get us there. Here's this incredible thing that this person just accomplished that I could never, ever do. And I feel like a little weirdly sheepish and ungrateful, as what Jordana was saying about actors. If I finally just buckle down and say, actually, I'm sorry, I really just want it to feel exactly like this. This is how I want to feel at the end of this effect or this bit of music. They go, thank you. That's what I want. Getting over my sheepishness about that is sort of something I've definitely felt myself doing over the course of season two and hope I'll continue to improve about in the future.
Yeah. In a slightly like converse way, I have a way I like to run a session. I have a vibe. I have a pace. I have like an approach. But a thing I think I allowed to happen a little more this time was to just let each session have the cadence of those actors. And I think you can feel it. A Diana O session is different than a Lori Parquet session. It's different than a Hannah Cheek session. And like those energies are the ingredients that make the season feel like rich and varied and textured. So like chilling out a little bit and letting somebody's energy really be what it's gonna be was like an exciting growth for me this season.
Yeah, I think that's wonderful. I think it's so clear when you build a warm and welcoming environment that encourages play from everyone involved, that helps you produce what is, you know, the magic that you all make.
Yeah, definitely.
We're very grateful.
So last two questions here. It's safe to say that there are some incredible new cast and story additions this year that we haven't even hinted towards yet. What are each of you most excited about people getting to experience from this return to Red Camp?
I'm excited for people to experience these characters being 100% themselves and also growing in ways you never would have expected. How's that for vague and no spoilers?
I love that. No, that's great.
I mentioned before the surprising metamorphosis that happens to a particular character. Again, and I'll step carefully around this, but there's something about what happens to that character that is kind of radiates in a wider way throughout the season, which is that I talked a little earlier about the idea that you can never completely shake off your past. I'm very excited by the idea that we're not just showing that the human characters can never completely shake off their past, but the alien ones as well, their own life back on their home world is something that they can't completely shake off. And the fact that they were all dissidents on their home planet, and the fact that they were all at different times taken in and imprisoned by the government, they all have a shared legacy of both comradeship and betrayal that, you know, they would ideally love to leave the bad parts behind and just start fresh on Earth. But there's always ways in which that stuff comes back to haunt you. I'm very excited of the exploration of the fact that trying to leave the unhealthy parts of your past behind, starting fresh, and the ways in which those parts of your past come back and haunt you. There's a frequent motif throughout the season of people trying unhappily to revisit places that made them happy in the past and that doesn't make them feel the same way now. I'm really excited to see how listeners react. How much can you start fresh? How much does your past keep you from starting fresh? And how much do you need to like reckon with your past to start over?
I love that. One last question here. If the ghost house were real and out there in Nevada, who among your team do you each think would be the first one to sign up and why?
It would not be me.
It would not be me. Maybe Sean. I feel like, you know, Bob, you don't really know Mac's wife, Sandy, but I feel like she'd be up for it. Don't you think?
It's so funny that neither the writer nor the director would actually do this. But that's always by design. A huge part of like when I come up with a story, it's like I come up with something that I would never do to force the story to go into a much more adventurous place than I would ever, because if I were only wrote about characters who do stuff that Mac Rogers would do, I would write some pretty tedious stories. It's funny, my mom listened to two of my podcasts back to back late last year. She listened to a podcast I wrote outside of Gideon, a specifically horror inflected podcast called Quiet Part Loud, where the whole point of that podcast was to scare the heck out of the audience as much as possible. And my mom listened to that, and then she listened to Give Me Away. And when the next time we talked on the phone, she said, "I thought Give Me Away was so much scarier than Quiet Part Loud." And I remember some people on our team said that they might be open to doing it, but definitely not me.
Yeah, I think Mac and I are both pretty cautious, well-behaved people, which is why we both love so much telling stories about and getting inside the heads of people who act a lot more rashly and permit themselves some destructiveness in a way we just never would.
There's a line of dialogue near the end of episode one where Morgan talks about why she would never sign up for the Nevada Project. She said, "Well, I don't get it. My head's already full of people," which is probably the closest any character has articulated the show so far to how I feel. It's like, really? Why do you, seriously, you feel all alone in your head? Because I don't feel all alone in my head. But yeah, no, it's interesting to think about. People write a lot about the epidemic of loneliness going on. Just to think about people who are so existentially lonely that this kind of thing would actually feel like a relief. But there's also kind of the nexus with how much are they doing it to relieve a kind of profound loneliness versus how much are they doing it to do a kind thing, a profoundly humanitarian, a profoundly generous, they call it radical hospitality in the story. How much is it the altruistic impulse versus how much of it is the selfish impulse? And I think that's going to be an ongoing conversation for however much of this story we're able to tell.
Well, that's fantastic. And, you know, I am positive that I am not alone in saying that. I sincerely hope that season two is just the beginning of more Give Me Away, because this show and everything the two of you and the rest of your team creates is really special, wonderful stuff. I hope all of you listeners will stay caught up to the series we did just release right before the season premiere came out. A fun recap of season one if you don't have time to re-listen, because we've got a really incredible adventure for you over the next few months. Thank you both so much for joining me today.
Thank you.
Thanks so much, Bob.
This is a pleasure.
The Fable and Folly Network, where fiction producers flourish.
Were you accused of a murder enacted by supernatural forces beyond your control?
Yeah.
Are you seeking a multi-figure gold settlement for damages to your business?
Yes.
Are you a young entrepreneur seeking justice for the murder of a family member that would be here if you were better at your job?
Yeah.
Hello, I'm Thomas Phelps. I am the attorney, along with my assistants, of Phelps, Oz, Mogbile, and Felcher, and we want to help you get justice.
Our expert legal services are available for a modest fee. But not too modest, I got a family to feed.
As a bot, I don't eat, but I do have a hunger. A hunger for justice.
And that hunger drives us to work for you, future client. From investigation to sentencing, we've got you covered for everything from public urination.
Oh, yeah.
To murder in varying degrees.
Don't look at me.
The attorneys of Phelps, Oz, Mogbile, and Felcher care about families. That's why they work quickly to help get this daddy off. I was blown away.
My business was in trouble after an unfortunate case of property damage. But the attorneys of Phelps, Oz, Mogbile, and Felcher helped set things right with a hefty gold settlement.
So come on down to the law offices of Phelps, Oz, Mogbile, and Felcher.
Located in the old Biscayne Boys building.
In Eastern Orgea.
Just follow the podcast highway signs for Dungeons and Drimbus and take the Season 3 exit. The attorneys of Phelps, Oz, Mogbio, and Felcher are not responsible nor liable for any of the following that may be incurred while working on your case. Sudden death, loss of limb, heartbreak, the use of magic to secure evidence, the wrath of an interdimensional being, urinary bladder infections, nausea, depression, the sudden desire to remove one's clothing, the illicit romance of a will-they-won't-they workplace scenario, or a complete and utter disregard for the natural laws of space and time.
Join your favorite fantasy attorneys for their next case.
Dungeons and Drimbus publishes every Friday, wherever podcasts are found.